Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about Hafrashas Challah. Hafrashas Challah is one of those mitzvos that is still being kept alive, you know, I would say by two categories of people. One category are bakers, right? And bakeries, from bakeries obviously are involved in Hafrashas Challah to a great extent. And for the most part, Jewish women who bake challah. You know, for those Jewish women who bake challah, that's the second category of people who are keeping it alive. My wife, tends to bake challah, and I, in my life, I was trying to think, like, when have I ever been mafrish challah? I think for the majority of my lifetime, I had never been mafrish challah, and Baruch Hashem, since I've been married, there's been a couple of times where my wife put the dough up, and then, you know, she asked me, to be mafrish. Usually she does it, but, you know, once or twice, she wasn't home or whatever, she asked me to do the hafrashas challah for her, so it's a big schus. I had the option, I had the opportunity to be mafrish challah on a couple of occasions, but really, really thanks to my wife. This minhag is brought in the Ramah in Hilchos Shabbos, in Siman Reish Mem Beis, in source number one, writes, Noagin la'alush kidei shir challah bebayis, la'asos mehem lachamim livtzo aleihem b'shabbos v'yom tov. That this is a minhag, meaning it's not just that you need challah on Shabbos, so that's why we bake, but there's a long-standing minhag for Jewish women to bake challah l'kavod Shabbos and l'kavod Yom Tov, of whom he covered Shabbos v'Yom Tov, ve'ein l'shanos. He writes, ve'ein l'shanos. You shouldn't change the minhag. That's the minhag. And I don't know if Zamex would like to hear ein l'shanos. You know, Zamex might prefer that the women stop baking, but that's it. Ein l'shanos. Yeah, you have to bake. And not only that, but the Ramah's language is kedei shiur challah, the amount. And we'll talk about some of the shiurim and the amounts, but the amount that's necessary for hafrashas challah. We'll see that, you know, not every amount is the same. So the Mishnah Berurah adds in here, it's interesting, that in addition to just having this idea of baking challah l'kavod Shabbos, in source number two he writes, Hainu milvad she'alisha v'afiyu hu michlal kavod Shabbos, besides for the fact that it's just kavod Shabbos v'yom tov, k'moshu m'saim l'basof, od yesh bozeh tam, he says there's another reason as well. What's the additional reason here? K'dei l'kayim mitzvah s'challah, l'fi she'ibda es adam harishon, sh'haya chaloso shel olam, she'nivra be'erev Shabbos. Very peculiar reason, quoted by the Mishnah Brura, that that Adam HaRishon is referred to as the Chala of the world. Now, in what sense was Adam HaRishon the Chala of the world? Presumably, Chava. What about Chava?
Chava was taken from Adam.
So. From Chala was, oh, you're saying Chala was taken from Adam,
yeah,
so that was the Hafrasha, Interesting. Interesting, okay, I didn't think about that. But,
It was probably the right shear too.
Yeah. But I was thinking that it could be, you know, one of the ways, which we'll see in a minute, the psukim, one of the ways that the Torah refers to the mitzvah of hafrashas challah is that it's actually like truma, right? And it's called reishis arisoseichem at the beginning when you first bake your bread at the beginning of the dough. So that's when you do the hafrasha. So this could also be like Adam HaRishon was the first of the dough. He was the first human being on this earth. So maybe it's something to do with that. Perhaps also that Adam was in a sense the sustenance of the world. Just like challah is our sustenance, right? We survive on bread. Although, as we've said many times throughout Halacha Shiurim, even though, you know, years ago the staple of everyone's diet was bread. Nowadays people try to shy away from bread, too many carbohydrates, but. But in reality, Adam was the sustenance of the world. He was the one who was keeping the world going. The world was created for him. So perhaps in that sense also, he's the chaloso shel olam. So here, what the Mishnah Berurah is saying is that, however we understand the fact that Adam was called the chal of the world, but since Chava had some role in extinguishing, right, Adam's life, that eventually he was supposed to live forever because of his chait, he did not. So of course he had responsibility as well, and we know the Torah punishes him for his role in the chait. But because of Chava's role in the chait, and because perhaps of the fact that she's the one who brought Adam to the chait of the Eitz Hadas, so because of that the Mishnah Berurah suggests that's one of the reasons that women have accepted the mitzvah of challah upon themselves as like a special mitzvah to do, or, you know, they could just buy bread. No, they want to do it. They want to bake challah. They want to be mafrish challah in order to somehow be mesakin or somehow fix up this avera of the Eitz Hadas. A similar idea is also given why women took upon themselves, we discussed this probably over a year ago, why women have taken upon themselves the mitzvah of Hadlakas Nero Shabbos. If you look in the sources, It doesn't say anything in the Gemara about women. It's a man and a woman, and we know whether it's a single man, a divorced man is obligated to light Neiro Shabbos in his home, just like a woman is. So it's not a halacha that is specific to women. So why is it that women have taken the mitzvah of halachas Neiro Shabbos upon themselves, that in married homes, the woman is the one who lights Shabbos candles? So a similar reason is given that since Adam was called Oro Shel Olam, he wasn't just the Chaloso Shel Olam, but he was also considered the light of the world, and again, Chava's role in that chait, so that's why the women have accepted upon themselves that mitzvah, these mitzvahs. It's interesting that they all revolve around Shabbos. You know, Adam was created in Erev Shabbos, but these mitzvahs are a way of tikkun.
If I remember, didn't you say Friday night that the three of Eris that women died?
Halakas aner. Halakas aner.
Hafrosh
eschala. Neither. Right.
Obviously,
those two. Already in the times of the Mishnah.
Right. That
correct. Correct, right.
Right.
Correct, right. Well, they've taken it upon themselves a little bit more. Right. The obligation of Hafrosh, I mean, Hafrosh eschala is an obligation on men just like it's on women, right? You have a...
It's not
chal. Right, exactly. I don't get too many Hafrosh eschala shilas. But the one that I got, I remember, was from actually a friend of mine who was a chef in a camp, and he was baking, and he called me with a hafrosh haschala shayla. So it applies to men just like it applies to women. But women definitely are the ones that have really kept it alive. If you look at the psukim in Parsha Shlach in source number 3, and this is really the source for the mitzvah of hafrosh haschala, and we'll see that some of these psukim are very important. The wording of the psukim in terms of how we understand the mitzvah nowadays. But the Torah tells us in source number 3, if you look, let's start at Pasuk Yud Ches, Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta, aleim speak to b'nei Yisrael, b'vo'achem el ha'aretz asher ani mevi eschem shama. When you come to the land to which I'm going to bring you, obviously referring to Eretz Yisrael, so that's when you're going to be chayiv in the mitzvah of chala, and we'll come back to that language in a minute. V'hayo ba'achachem ilechem ha'aretz in Pasuk Yud Tes, tarimu teruma la'ashem. When you come to eat from the bread of the land, you have to be mafresh truma. And here it's again referring to challah. Challah is being referred to as truma. Truma just really means a donation, a gift. So just like when we take truma from grain and we give it to the kohen, that's our gift to the kohen. So to challah is referred to as truma because, as we know, as we'll talk about, challah originally was separated from the dough and was given to the kohen. That was part of the matnos kehuna in pasuk chaf. Reishis arisoseichem, as we just mentioned, the beginning of your dough, chala tarimu teruma, kisruma asgoren kein tarimu osa, just like you take truma from your threshing floor, just like you take truma from your grain, so too you have to be mafresh, you have to separate this part from your dough. Me reishis arisoseichem, titnu la'ashem teruma l'daroseichem, you have to give it to Hashem, and as we understand, it doesn't mean literally giving it to Hashem, but it means giving it to the Kohanim, who are the ones who serve Hashem. That's what you have to do. It's not clear in the psukim what the minimum amount of challah that you have to be mafresh is. And again, tonight when we talk about challah, sometimes the terminology gets confusing. When we colloquially refer to challah, we're referring to the bread that we eat on Shabbos. We call that challah, right? But when it comes to the mitzvah, of hafrashas challah, challah actually refers to just that little piece that we take off. The rest of it is just bread. So again, colloquially, we refer to everything as challah. In the context of the shiur, when we talk about challah, we're talking about that little piece that you take off of the dough before it's baked. So the Rambam writes that really midoraisa there is no shiur. There's no minimum amount of challah. He writes in source number 4 in Hilchos Bikurim, mitzvah saseh lahafrish churuma min ha'isa l'kohen. A person has to separate a little piece from the dough and give it to the kohen as a present. Shenema reishi sari soseichem, the pasuk we just read. The reishi zu ein lo shir min haTorah. He writes, there's no shir from the Torah. There's no minimum amount from the Torah. Afilu hifrish kisaora patar esaisa. Even if you take a minute amount, the size of a barley grain, right, a very tiny amount of dough, and you mafresh that dough and you give that to the kohen, he may not be so happy with your donation. But if you give that small amount to the kohen, it technically works. Your dough is now completely mutter, and you're permitted to partake of that dough. So midoraisa, there is no shir. Midrabbanan, we do talk about certain shiurim. It has to be something of significance. Nowadays, the general custom is to try to take at least a kezias, at least an olive's worth of the dough. And again, in the, we assume that in those days the olives were a little bit bigger, but estimate about the size of a golf ball. That's generally the size, the amount of dough that that you should be mafrish for afrashas chala. In terms of whether, I mean, it's clear from the Torah that this obligation to be mafrish chala is mida oraisa. It's clear that it's mida oraisa, but it's also clear from the psukim that this mitzvah of afrashas chala is teluya ba'aretz. Right? It's a mitzvah that's dependent on the land of Israel, right? As the Torah says, b'voachem al ha'aretz asher ani mevi'eschem shama, when we come to the land. So it's very clear that the mitzvah is land dependent, it's Eretz Yisrael dependent, and it's seemingly, it sounds like just like Truma and Meiser and Shemitah and all these halachos, which are agricultural laws that pertain to Eretz Yisrael only and don't apply here at all. Here we don't have to worry unless you're buying Israeli produce in Costco and you get an alert every once in a while from the VAD. But otherwise, you know, you're buying regular produce in Gourmet Glad or, you know, Seasons or wherever you're buying it. And then, you know, you don't have to worry about Shumos and Maestros and Shemitah. You don't have to worry about all these things. Right? That's what they say in America. The safest thing to eat is fruits and vegetables. You have to be careful about insect infestation. We discussed that a couple weeks ago. But, you know, let's say you buy an apple. That's the safest thing to eat in America. You buy fruit, right? You're good. You're great. You have nothing to worry about. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's almost the opposite. And when it comes to fruits and vegetables in Eretz Yisrael, you have a lot of things to worry about. Chumos and Maestros and Shemitah and, you know, all these halachos that are very specific to the land of Israel. So it would seem that the land is very, very important. And the Gemara tells us that in Maseches Ksuvos, the Gemara says, where it's underlined in source number 5, that afilu l'man de'omar truma bizman hazeh de'oraisa. Even if you say that nowadays truma is de'oraisa, even if you say there's a discussion about that for another time, but the discussion of truma nowadays is de'oraisa or not, but even if you say it is de'oraisa, chala de'rabana, but we assume nowadays that even that the mitzvah of chala is mid'rabana, nowadays again, we're talking about times of the Gemara already, was already nowadays. So why? Why is it only mid'rabana? The Torah says you have to take a chala, so why is it only mid'rabana? The Tanya, as the Braisa tells us, b'vo'achem el ha'aretz, when you come to the land, you might think, so what's when you come? When who comes? Maybe when the first couple of meraglim went into Eretz Canaan, maybe then we're chayv and chala, right? You came into the land. No. Tamalomer b'voachem, b'vias kulchem amarti. Right? You're only chayv and chala when you all come to the land. V'lo b'vias miktzaschem. The Chi Askinu Ezra, already at the times of Ezra, when Ezra brought the Jews back to Eretz Yisrael in times of the Bayesheni, Lav Kulhu Saluk. They didn't all come back with him. They didn't all come back, as we know. They didn't all come back with Ezra. So therefore, already after the Churban HaBayis, when Klal Yisrael went into Galus, and even when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, for the Bayesheni, not everyone came back. Not everyone came back, and many Jews still lived in Chutz La'aretz. So therefore, because of that, it's the mitzvah of challah, mida oraisa, on the Torah level, doesn't apply anymore, even in the land of Israel. It's only mida oraisa when the majority, right, of the Jewish people live in Israel, which is not the case. Wasn't the case since Churban Bayis Rishon. So therefore, once the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash happened, this mitzvah, mida oraisa of challah, became only a mitzvah of mida rabbana.
In Eretz Yisrael.
Even in Eretz Yisrael.
I'm saying, not even in Eretz Yisrael.
What about Chutz La'aretz? Good. So what about Chutz La'aretz? Good. So we'll see. Good. Okay. And the Rambam paskins this way. If you look in source number 6, he writes that that it has to be Bizman Shekol Yisrael Sham. It has to be that the entire Jewish people is in Eretz Yisrael. And it comes out that really Mida Oraisa, you have two requirements. Number one, it has to be dough of the land. It has to be dough that came from, that grew in Eretz Yisrael. There's a Mishnah, we actually learned it in the Beis Avil not long ago. There's a Mishnah about what if you have dough that was, that the grain was grown in Chutz La'aretz and it was imported into Eretz Yisrael. So then it's a Machlokas. Right? But certainly if you have dough that was grown in, you know, the grain was grown in Eretz Yisrael, and it was produced in Eretz Yisrael, that's certainly the case. That's certainly chayv and chalam midoraisa, but you need the majority of the Jews there, and that doesn't exist anymore. What about in Chutz La'aretz? What about in Chutz La'aretz? So comes the Rambam in source number 7 and writes, in Chutz La'aretz it's even less. It's even less. Meaning, technically speaking, there should not be a mitzvah in Chutz La'aretz at all. We don't have any mitzvah of truma in Chutz La'aretz. It's only Eretz Yisrael. We don't have any mitzvah of Shemitah. We don't have any mitzvah of Meiser. We don't have any of these agricultural mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz. So technically speaking, the mitzvah of Chala should be the same thing, and it should not apply in Chutz La'aretz at all. However, writes the Rambam that it does apply in Chutz La'aretz. Mafrishin Chala b'Chutz La'aretz midivrei sofrim. Midivrei sofrim is another way of expressing midi rabbanan. right? That, and this was even in the times when Chala was Mide Oraisa in Eretz Yisrael, they established that in Chutz Laretz should be Mide Rabban. Actually, that's not true. They established it afterwards, Mide Rabban in Chutz Laretz. Why? Kidei Shalos Yishtakach Torah Chala Mi Yisrael. So that people shouldn't forget about the mitzvah of Chala. Right? Because keep in mind, after the Galus, right, Chala no longer applied Mide Oraisa. So they said it still applied Mide Rabbanan. But think about it, after the Galus, you know, if all these mitzvahs wouldn't apply, so then we would forget about them. So the other mitzvahs, Truma and Meiser and Shemitah, which might be Mide Oraisa, Bizman Hazeh, Shemitah might be Derabbanan nowadays, but those things, okay, you know, so there we're not going to forget about those things. But Chala, we might forget about the whole mitzvah. So therefore they establish a Mide Rabbanan, and you should do it in Chutz Laretz as well. And it's one of the interesting things, because it's really the only agricultural mitzvah that should really only pertain to Eretz Yisrael, and it really does apply in Chutz Laretz as well on a Derabbanan level. So it's a big schus for us that we here in Chutz Laretz get to partake of this mitzvah that's really a mitzvah that's almost Tluya Ba'aretz. Okay, good. So Chadash, right. Chadash is yeah, we spoke about it. Did I speak about that here once? I think actually one of the Berkowitz boys gave a shiur about that once. Yeah. Chadash might also. You know, but most of us here in Chutz Laretz are lenient when it comes to when it comes to Chadash. We don't only eat Yashan, right? We're Mekel.
No proper Hashgacha giving
the only reason for that is that's for business.
Right.
That's because they don't want to exclude any part of the community. Yeah. You know, so they want everybody to be able to enjoy the, you know, and to buy their things. But most of us are lenient. At least Ashkenazim, Sfardim are much more machmir. Right. But most Ashkenazim are lenient when it comes to Chadash nowadays in Chutz Laretz. You know, because we assume it came from Goyim. Well, it is a derabbanan. I mean, Divrei Sofim is still a derabbanan. So it's still a derabbanan. We make a bracha even on minhagim. Right? We made a bracha on halal today. It was only a minhag. So it is a derabbanan. It's a full fledged derabbanan. It's just, it's not quite, maybe it's not Eretz Yisrael, but it's a full-fledged Derabbanan. Now, very important, this the halacha of challah only applies to dough that belonged to Jews as it was being needed, right? The Shulchan Aruch tells us in source number 8 that Isas Oved Kochavim Petura, Afilu Lasha Yisrael. If you have dough that belongs to a guy, it's pater from challah. The Torah is very clear. It's only you. Reishis Ariso Seichem, it's your dough. It's not the dough of that belongs to others, that belongs to a guy. And it says here that even, the Shulchan Aruch writes, that even if you have a Jew needing it, so even if you have, let's say, a Goyish bakery, and even it doesn't matter, even if the baker that he hires is Jewish, it doesn't matter. And the baker's needing it, doesn't make a difference. It depends on who owns it. If the guy owns it, then you don't have to worry. Which is why we do buy produce. You know, we buy Freihoffer's bread, and we buy, we buy Stella Dora cookies, and we buy all this produce that's baked by non-Jews. They're not being mafresh challah, right? There's no mashkiach, even if it has an OU on it. I guarantee you, there's no OU mashkiach that is in the plant being mafresh challah, because there's no obligation to be mafresh challah. It's a goyish company, and there's no requirement to. If it's a Jewish company, so then you have to, right? That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. V'shel Yisrael, chayeves afilu lo shelo oved kochavim. A Jewish company, even if he has goyim doing the baking, even if he has goyim doing the kneading, then still you're chayev to be mafresh challah. So that's an important thing, yeah.
Companies like Pashkus and all that, they're doing that on...
Of course, yeah.
On every... How
often... That's a good question. How they do it when you're producing on such a, you know, such a... mass level.
They buy it. That's
distributed. Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, whatever. But, let's say Reisman's or something.
Right?
Yeah. Reisman's. So they're being mafresh challah. You know, when exactly and how exactly... I'm not sure. That's probably, I'm not sure exactly when and how they're doing it.
Well, the matzah bakery strikes and the shemesh.
100%, right, of course. They have to, presumably, after every batch of dough, you know, they have, I'm sure they make the dough in batches. I mean, listen, they can only knead a certain amount of dough at one time, you know, even with machines. You can only knead a certain batch of dough. It's going to be a lot bigger than the batch in your, in our homes. You know, I still remember seeing in the camp kitchen, this gigantic mixer looked like a KitchenAid on steroids. You know, this like huge KitchenAid type mixer. So they're making a big batch of dough, and presumably when they make one batch, you know, they're mafresh challah from that batch. Now keep in mind, they don't have to be mafresh so much. If it's one batch of dough, they just have to take the same kazayas that we have to take. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, as big as the dough is. When complicated shilas start to, when you have different batches of dough and then you want to be mitzarif, then we're not going to get into that tonight. That's like a complicated shilas about how to join up the different batches of dough, and there are ways to do it. But if you have one big batch of dough, you know, it's all a big mound of dough, then presumably they just mafresh, you know, each time. Yeah, each time they make a batch. They probably do one hafrasha.
And each time they make a bracha?
Yeah. Every time you have a batch of dough, you have to make a bracha when you do it, you know. I mean, it could be that if you have, you know, several batches of dough all lined up, you can make one bracha and be mafresh, you know, several times, you know, with that one bracha. Again, I don't know the mechanics of how they work it in the factories. But it's good. It's a good homework for me. We could do some research and talk to some of the people. But yeah.
Does this apply to all types of breads?
We'll talk about it. Good. We'll talk about it. That's next. Good. So actually, that's the next topic. So if you turn to the second side of the page, source number 9. So the Mishnah tells us. Mishnah and Chala tells us that which items are obligated in Hafrashas Chala. So the Mishnah tells us that anything that's baked from the 5 grains. So chamisha dvarim chayovim bechala. There are five grains are obligated in chala. Achitim v'haseorim v'akusmim v'shibola shua v'shifo, which is wheat, barley. Kusmin is rye. I always get confused kusmin and shifon. I think kusmin is spelt. Kusmin is spelt. Kusemet is spelt, I think. Shibola shua is for sure oats, and shifon is rye, I think. Right, I think if I'm not mistaken, sometimes I get confused with the shifon and the kusmin. I think kusmin is spelt. But those five grains, wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt, those five grains are obligated in challah. Harelu chayov and bechalum itzdarf in zeimzeh. Anything else is not chayv in challah. So you can make all the cornbread you want, you know, anything like that, millet or whatever else you're using. That's not chayv in challah. Only those five grains. Now, what exactly is chayv and challah? So if you look, skip for a minute, source number 10, we'll come back to it. But if you look at source number 11, the Aruch HaShulchan discusses different types of things that you are that you're baking. So he writes, ulefize lekech, v'tort, rekikin adakim, p'turin michala. He writes that if you're making, lekech, you're making like cake and cookies and things like that, so he says that's pada from challah. Okay, now hold on. You'll see in a minute that we are mafresh challah from these things. But he writes that it's pater from challah, and he writes not only that. V'chein kol haminei tigun bechema kmo kreplach. What about kreplach? You're frying kreplach, right? You're frying them. He talks about frying them in butter. I know that sounds pretty good, not so healthy. But so you see, you're frying these kreplach in butter. Hametugan bechema v'kol shein kreplach abishal. And certainly, if you are cooking, you're boiling. Let's say you're boiling kreplach. You're putting them in the soup. In your chicken soup, and you're cooking them. Ublinses, taigach, I don't know what that is.
Teglach.
There's no lamed in there, I don't know. The latkes, okay, that much I know, that I could do. Upam, puskis, all these things, that one I'm not sure about either. But all these things he writes are pater from challah. Anything that's being fried, that's being boiled, and even things like cake and cookies and things like that, all those things are pater from challah. And he writes, "V'zeu shekasu isa shebelilasa ava v'gilgula al das levashlo l'tagna peturim." He says, and it doesn't make a difference, even if you have a real dough, right? But let's say I'm boiling it. I'm a real dough, but I'm frying it. So he says it's pater from challah in that case. And certainly, if you have an isa raka that you're baking, he says that would be the same thing. So that we said that would be the same thing. Now nowadays, we hold it is a machlokus about these types of things, and therefore we are mafresh challah from all these things, but without a bracha.
So bagels,
yeah, bagels and donuts, all these things that are fried. So I believe that they're mafresh without a bracha. Bagels are boiled. Bagels are boiled. Donuts are fried and things like that. So I believe that all these things are done without a bracha. Without a bracha, certain types of cake. It depends if it's like he talks about lekach and things that are rekikin dakin that are very thin and things like that. So it could be that some sort of cakes are more are considered chayev and you would do it with a bracha. But certainly many of these types of cookies and pasa babakisnin and all these types of things they're mafresh challah but without a bracha. They do it without a bracha. Any bread certainly requires a fresh challah with a bracha. Now, in terms of the shear of how much dough, right? How much dough do you need in order to be chayav in the mitzvah of hafrashas challah? So the Rambam writes, and if you look at source number 10, the Rambam here, and again in Hilchos Bikurim, writes that the amount of dough, kamashir isa, ha'isa shechayev es b'chala, what's the amount of dough that's obligated in chala? So he writes, it's melo ha'omer kemach. So if you have an omer's worth of kemach, of flour, and you make that into dough, so that's going to be chayev in afrashas chala. And he talks about the fact that it's the 5 medium. Now that's great, but what's how big is an omer? You know, that's nice. How big is an omer? So he does, the Rambam does a whole calculation. I cut out the whole Rambam. He does a whole calculation to try to figure out how much is an omer. You know, all this math, he's multiplying and he's doing all these things. And at the end he writes, "Bekama mechila midazu." How much does this measurement, he creates like a box. It's incredible. The Rambam like creates like an imaginary box. And he says, how much would this box fill up? And he says, "Kimo arbaim v'shalosh beitzim beinonios v'chomesh beitza." He says it's 43 and a fifth eggs. 43 and a fifth. Right, that's the precise calculation that the Rambam comes up with, and many of the Rishonim come up with the same calculation, and that's the assumption that it's 43 and a fifth beitzim. Now that's great, but how much is that? Right, how much is that? You know, nobody's taking.
That's on the dough, right?
That's on the dough. Kamashir ha'isa.
It's on the dough.
Yeah, that's on the dough. That's on. Oh no! I'm sorry. It's on the flour. You're right. It's on the flour. No, because he says, I'm sorry, he begins Kama Shira Isa, but then he says Meloha Omer, Meloha Omer Kemach.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the shear of the flour, right?
So it's going to be less on the dough.
Correct, because the dough is going to have water in it and all these things, yeah. So it's interesting. The Rambam actually translates this into some Egyptian measurements that they had. So it didn't help me to try to, you know, to understand what it was, because he was translating it into like ancient Egyptian measurements, medieval Egyptian measurements. But he actually translated into like, you know, I guess for the people of his time, he translated into what would the equivalent be of 43 and a fifth beitzim, what would that be in the Egyptian measurements that they used at the time? Baruch Hashem, now we have Talmidei Chachamim, who are very knowledgeable in science, who've converted this into something that we can understand. And that's why many of them say, and again, it's not so clear, because of the nature of the sheer beitza, that this egg's worth is not so clear exactly how big it is, and the eggs may have changed over time, and you know, maybe we'll talk about that another time in terms of different shiurim. So basically, what poskim say is that there's a sliding scale of how much flour we're talking about in order to be mafresh challah. So, for example, it seems that everyone agrees that you're supposed to be mafresh challah if you bake with about 2.5, really 2.6, we'll call it 2.5. Pounds of flour, okay, 2.6 pounds of flour, which I saw the Star K translated, because they're fantastic for all this scientific halacha stuff, and the Star K translated is to the average equivalent of 8 2/3 cups of flour. Obviously, that's not precise because, you know, different flour might be different measurements, and flour depending on storage temperature, which of course the Star K you know, mentions in a footnote. But all these on average it's about 8 2/3 cups. But you would not make a bracha on that amount. So again, if you use 2.6 pounds of flour, you would be mafresh challah, but without a bracha. In terms of when to do with a bracha, there's two minhagim of what to do. Some people are mafresh with a bracha when they need 3.675 pounds, okay, which is the equivalent of about 12 1/4 cups. And some are not mafresh with a bracha unless they are needing 4.95 pounds of flour, which is the equivalent of 16 1/2 cups of flour. So if you want to be safe, all you have to do is make the whole 5-pound bag. Right, they sell flour in 5-pound bags. So if you make the whole bag of the bag of flour and you make that all into challah, so then, you know, even if a little bit of flour gets lost in the transition, but that's okay. You're making the 5-pound bag, and therefore you'll be mafrish challah with a bracha. That's what my wife does whenever she bakes challah. She bakes, you know, she uses a whole 5-pound bag of flour. She's mafrish challah with a bracha. And she puts them in the freezer. You know, you don't need to use them all that Shabbos. You put them in the freezer, and then she has for a few weeks. So that's what the recommendation is. Again, if you're doing anything less than that, then you have to kind of play this estimation game in terms of how much you're doing. If you're using 2.6 pounds, so then, you know, a little more than half the bag, so then you have to be mafresh, but without a bracha. If you're using any less than that, then you're not mafresh challah at all. So if you make, you know, you just want to make a couple of rolls, and you take just a little bit of flour, you know, a couple of cups of flour, then you don't have to be mafresh challah at all. There's no obligation to be mafresh challah at all. In terms of the procedure of how exactly we do the hafrasha, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch in source number 12, so he writes that our practice is, ha'idna, he writes, nowadays, tov lahamtin milahafrish chala ar achar gemar lisha. It's best to wait until you finish kneading the dough. There might have been some possibilities of being mafrish chala even before that, but technically speaking, you wait, you know, the best thing to do, best practice, is to wait until you finish kneading the dough. Now the whole dough is one big you know, connected piece of dough, and that's when the proper time is to be mafrish challah. But the Shulchan Aruch does mention in two sifim later, right there, I brought it again in source 12, that let's say you forgot. You know, sometimes people forget. They're making challah, and they forget to be mafrish challah, and they baked all the challah ready. So what do? Imlo hifrish challah batzek, if you haven't been mafrish challah, when it was still dough, ela afa hakol, you already baked the whole 5 pound bag. Hareze mafresh min apas. So b'di'evad, you can still be mafresh when it's from the bread state, when it's already baked. You can still be mafresh challah at that point, and you remove the challah at that point. The general procedure for afrashas challah is that it's best to stand, which is a general policy whenever we are making brachos on mitzvos. Some say even when doing mitzvahs, but certainly when you're making a bracha on a mitzvah, the best practice is to stand. So it's best to stand up, even if you may have been kneading sitting down. I think most people like to knead standing up and get more leverage. But you should stand up when you're making the bracha. And what you do is you take the piece of dough in your hand. Don't detach it yet, right? I mean, keep it still attached. Just grab like a fistful of dough, you know, about a golf ball size. You know, you could do a little bigger. It's not the end of the world. You take a piece of dough, you know, a clump of dough in your hand while it's still attached to the rest of the dough, and you make the bracha. If you look in source number 13, the Shulchan Aruch brings the bracha. It's interesting. He actually has two different texts of the bracha. Asher kedushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu lahafrish truma, and then in the parentheses they say o lahafrish challah. So I don't know if anybody who makes the bracha lahafrish truma, maybe the Sfardim do. I'm not sure. I have to check with my Sfardi friends. But we make the bracha lahafrish challah. Many have the custom to make the bracha lahafrish challah min ha'isa. So that text is actually not brought here, but it is a custom to say lahafrish challah min ha'isa. Some posts can point out, it's also just interesting to keep in mind, that we just mentioned that b'di'eved, if you forgot to be mafrish challah while it was in the dough state and you baked it already, you can be mafrish while it's bread. But there you shouldn't say min ha'isa, right? Because there, if you're being mafrish when it's bread, it's not isa anymore. Now it's bread. So there, just say lahafrish challah in that kind of a case. Once you make the bracha, then you separate the piece of challah. And by the way, the reason why we keep it attached is because we always try to make brachos over lasiyasa. We always try to make brachos before we do the mitzvah. So since the mitzvah is the hafrasha, is the separation of this piece of challah from the dough, so therefore you make the bracha while it's still attached. You're holding it, you're about to do it, but it's still attached. You make the bracha, detach it from the rest of the dough, then you've done your hafrasha. And it used to be, right, the Torah in source number 14, it used to be that you would give that to the Kohen. Ubizman shaya tahara ba'aretz, when we had ritual purity in the land of Israel, lo hayu mafrishin alachala achas, v'necheles lekohen. Right, they would be mafrish this piece of chal, and the Kohen would eat it. Uvimikomos hakrovos la beis chalos echad liorvi echad lekohen. Okay, ve'ata she'ein tahara be'eretz Yisrael. But nowadays, where we know we don't have tahara, even in Eretz Yisrael, right? Everybody's walking around. We assume everybody's tamei. Even the Kohanim are tamei, so they cannot eat. The Kohanim cannot eat truma nowadays because they're tamei. Kohen cannot eat truma b'tuma, and a Kohen cannot eat challah because the challah is like truma. It has similar halachas to truma. And therefore, just like a Kohen cannot eat truma when he's tameh, he also can't eat challah when he's tameh. So the Kohen cannot consume this challah. So what do? Yevshel haKohen le'achol shama challah el nisrefes. We burn it. That's it. We burn it. When it comes to truma, so what we do is we redeem it on a coin, and then we end up destroying the coin. But when it comes to challah, we burn this this piece of dough that was removed, and that's what we do nowadays. You take it off, you remove it, and you wrap it up, and you can burn it. You should wrap it in something, in aluminum foil or something like that. You could burn it in your oven. It should be burnt until it's really burnt, until it's charred. So you know, your whole house might or your kitchen might stink a little from the burnt challah. But you know, do it at a time when not too many people are around, and then open the windows. But you burn it until it's really charred. The poskim say you should not burn it while there's other things baking in the oven. And this is not really for kashrus reasons. It's really because then what happens is that you're using the challah is almost being used as fuel, because it's increasing the heat. You have something that's burning, it's increasing the heat in the oven, and you're not allowed to use truma or challah as fuel for your cooking. So that's why you should do it in an empty oven. You can do it in a toaster, in an oven, it doesn't really make a difference. You burn it, and then some say it's good to wrap it in something waterproof, you know, put it in a plastic bag. I think the logic behind that is that it shouldn't get ruined. I mean, eventually it's going to get ruined anyway. But, you know, then you could throw it out. But just, you know, it is something that's kadosh. It's something that's truma, it's challah. So it's not something that you want to really degrade. So we burn it, and then you put it in a bag and throw it into the garbage. And then whatever happens to it. It's not in our department anymore. But that's essentially what we do with challah. It's as we mentioned, it's an important mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that, as the Gemara said, the reason why we have this mitzvah is k'dei shelo sishtakach, so that we shouldn't forget about it. So it's something that when we do it, you know, I think it's just an important perspective. You know, as I was preparing this year, I was thinking about this. I didn't really appreciate it beforehand, but it's an interesting perspective that we're really, in a sense, when we're mafresh challah, besides for all the tefillos and the beautiful things that the women have, a whole tefillah that they say afterwards, which is a beautiful thing to say. But besides for that, in a sense, you're really connecting to Eretz Yisrael. This is one of the few mitzvos atluyos ba'aretz that we can do here in Chutz Laaretz. So when we do this mitzvah, in a sense, we're connecting to Eretz Yisrael, and we have also this shelot yishtakach, that we have this hope that one day, you know, we'll get back to the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll be able to be mafresh challah midoraisa in a way that we can't do nowadays anymore. Once you burn it, you can throw it out. Yeah, once you burn it, you can throw it out. You know, just try to wrap it in a bag or something. You don't want to disgrace it right away. So put it in a Ziploc bag or something like that, and then throw it out. By the way, it's important that you should try to throw it out as soon as possible. One of the reasons why Chazal say, the poskim say you should burn it, is because, you know, you don't want to have any problems with this challah. This challah is usr. You can't eat it. It's now truma. So, you know, there are many shilas that come up. If a person, let's say, you know, they leave it on their counter, and somebody from the family is walking by, and they see a piece of dough on the counter, they take it and they throw it back into the bowl, you know, and now the challah is all mixed up. It's a big shiloh, you know. It's a big shiloh if that happens. So that's why they recommend, you know, right after you take it, you know, wrap it up quickly, put it off to the side, you know, burn it. Try to burn it as soon as possible to avoid any potential problems. Yeah.
Does this apply only to challah that's baked from scratch? Does it also apply to these frozen challahs, which are raw, frozen?
Good question. Right, good question. So I imagine that something like that, first of all, you're probably not going to have a shear. Right? Even if you have this kineret challah, I mean, even if you're making one or two challahs, it's not going to be that much dough. That's number one. Number two, I think... Yeah, no, but even without a bracha, you only do if it's like 2.6 pounds. But these places, they do it. I'm sure that they do it. You know, in the factories.
Okay.
Yeah, they do it in the factories. Okay. They're the ones who are making the dough, and they do it in the factories. Theoretically, you know, the only other possibility is that if you get frozen dough from a guy or something, you know. But even that, you're not chayef. That's what we said earlier. That once the dough is owned by the guy, it's his guy. It's his dough. That's it. Yeah.
When you say burn it, does it get burnt directly on the fire?
No.
Like,
no.
Wrap it in tin foil.
Yeah. It should be burnt, though. Meaning,
burned,
if, yeah.
And then I throw it out.
Yeah. If you put it in the oven, it doesn't have to be literally on a grill. You know, you don't need flames. But you could put it in the oven, but it should get burnt. It should, you know, when you open it up, it should look black. It should look burnt, you know.
Sometimes it just bakes, and then you just, like,
right. So keep it in. Keep it in. If you keep it in, I promise it'll burn. Eventually it'll burn. You know. Also, you can't wrap, you know, don't wrap it so much, you know, because then the more you wrap it, the harder it is to, you know, the longer it's going to take to burn. Don't leave it open. You have to wrap it because it's challah. It's not, you know, but you wrap it. Wrap it once, you know, wrap it once and burn it. Yeah.
So anyway, so this challah that you bought from the guy,
yeah,
so he doesn't have to take challah.
Right, and you don't either. But because once it's his dough,
now it's yours.
But that's what we learned in the Shulchan Aruch, that once it's his dough, it's pater from challah. Once it's his dough, it depends who owned it when it was needed.
Resold to a Jew.
It doesn't matter, right? It depends who owned it when it was needed. So if it was needed in the possession of a non-Jew, so then it's pater from challah. If it was needed in the possession of a Jew, then it's chayav in challah.
But what if you take it from the guy and then you're going to shape it? It was pre-needed. It
doesn't matter.
Putter.
Putter. Okay. Yeah, yeah. You really want to be mafresh challah, Herb.
I'll think about
that. Okay, we'll stop here. Shkoyach. And again, Miral Bas Chaim Elio Halevi Yishnashama Shavan Aliyah.